This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Well, good evening, everyone. So you may be wondering where the new language that we brought into the Fusatsu tonight came from. On Sunday, when we introduced the Ango, I drew from Master Dogen's fascicle on practice, the practice period, Ango. And in that, he talks about a ceremony that would be held during Ango, in which this language is part of the ceremony, part of the liturgy. And so I drew from that and made some changes to make it work within the Fusatsu. But wanted to do that because it spoke of the spring deity and the earth protectors, the guardians of the earth, and the dragon deities. Every week we do a service for Hakuto-san, which is the white dragon, the protector deity of this temple and monastery and the grounds. As we're beginning spring and we'll be coming into Earth Day, and the Earth Initiative is preparing some things for us, for the Sangha to be involved in, I thought it would be nice to invoke these deities and guardians of the earth, those who protect the Dharma and the earth and all of its creatures and all of life. And so we might ask, how do we understand these beings, which in Buddhism, particularly Mahayana Buddhism, are present and numerous? Are they relics of a superstitious past? Are they ancient beliefs before modern science? Are they real? Are they metaphors? Do they appear as a way of helping us to explain or understand the inexpressible? Do they help us to open our mind to the many realms within this universe and within mind itself, and sort of open up our reflections and willingness to consider the breadth and depth and boundlessness of human consciousness? Three worlds are mind, the Buddha said. We create faces and beings all the time in our mind. We create places and worlds, actions, events. Are those real or are they unreal? We open our eyes and our senses and we see faces and people in front of us. We hear things. Are those existent or non-existent? The Bodhisattva is a being that is deeply concerned for this world and everything in it, sentient and insentient, doesn't discriminate. And that deep concern comes out of the Bodhisattva's basic nature, because it is our nature to be concerned, to care, to want to live, to affirm life. But it also comes, very importantly, out of their understanding about this world and human beings and all of life, how precious it is, how fragile it is in its impermanence, but also how powerful and resilient it is. And so the Bodhisattva makes a vow to live a life of non-harming. And as living beings in a deeply interconnected world with other living beings, we cannot go through this life without harming every day. And so how do we live a life dedicated to non-harming? How do we bring forth what is good? How do we take responsibility for our influence, for our impact on everything that we touch. So the winter deity is retreating. The spring deity is blowing fragrant breezes. The light is shifting as the sun rises higher in the sky. Its rays are growing warmer. The buds on the trees that have been there since the fall, the last burst of energy from the trees, preparing for the next season before their deep sleep, are getting ready to open. Shoots will soon appear. Do we see and appreciate the wonder of this life? I was saying to somebody just this morning that because I've had such a long and deep love for things of the world and things of the woods and forests and particular trees, and so I've read a great deal, and over again in books from science, sort of very, you know, grounded botanists and horticulturists and people who study trees, that over and over again, and talking about things that we might think are very simple. I mean, a tree is just a tree. How complicated could it be? And yet again and again, we'll come across passages where they will talk about something that we might think should be very obvious, and they'll say, actually, we don't really understand how this works. We don't really understand so much about those beings. Do we see and appreciate the wonder of this earth and all of its interlocking systems that more and more is being understood to not be a fight to the finish, a competition, but rather a deeply mutual world of survival, of yearning towards life, and of assisting, assisting other beings. And to the extent that we don't see and appreciate the wonder of this life and this earth, how does that come about? How might that happen, given that we are nothing but life and we are completely dependent on it, and that we are nothing but this earth and completely dependent upon it? How could we become dislocated? What is the karmic path? Because there must be a karmic path. That does not just happen. Nothing just happens. Everything dependently arises. And dependently arising, it can turn, it can shift in a new direction. And so when a person experiences greed and indifference, abuse and neglect inflicted upon them, when they are not seen, recognized, understood, appreciated, the pain and suffering is great. It inhabits the body and mind. It diminishes the spirit, their natural light and radiance and joy. When the earth and its living creatures have those same illnesses afflicted upon them, when they are not seen and appreciated, understood, loved, their pain and suffering is great. Human beings cry out. We get angry. We strike back, or we retreat if we are not heard, if not cared for. But eventually we wither. What does the earth do? How does the earth respond when it is not heard and responded to? Is this, in fact, what we're living now, what we're living into? The heart of, the center of every moment, experience of suffering, is the absence of compassion. Compassion in Buddhism means not harming. And so when that is absent, when compassion is absent, that means what is present is some form of harming. And we are called to non-harming, to loving our earth, to remembering that, to reclaiming that if we have forgotten. The absence of loving kindness, happiness, and well-being, these are spiritual poverties, profound absences, vacancies in our heart, in our mind, deep wounds that don't just happen. None of this just naturally appears or is inherent in the world. It's created. The three worlds are mine, the profound implications, ramifications of that understanding, of that teaching, of that truth. And possessing, having created those karmic paths that bring about this kind of dislocation, being having that, having inherited that to our own particular degrees, individually, culturally, globally, it seems normal. We pass it on until we break the cycle. Just like all forms of delusion, we interrupt the current, we liberate what is bound. And so what are these spirits and these deities, guardians, protectors of the forests and mountains, rivers, plains and deserts, the skies? I remember living in New York the first spring I was living there many, many years ago in the late 70s and living on the upper West Side, very close to the park. And I remember looking out my window one day, on a day just like this, one of the first warm days, and I thought, what is going on? It like there was a mass of people moving towards the park. I thought, is something going on? What's going on? Like a magnet. It was like people were being drawn. When we enter a space and allow ourselves to be attuned to that place, as Master Dogen said in the Ten Directions, with a sincere heart, we will experience something. We might think of it or experience it or call it a presence or a force or an energy, a stillness, a power, a gentleness, a purpose. It's like we're entering into the body and mind, for want of other words, ways to describe it, of some of what we call a space. And we begin to experience something that is alive, that is moving, and that is moving within us. And I think those are moments where we begin to reclaim something very, very old, very ancient, that is not so much a matter of belonging to us, but is us. In that fascicle, Dogen spoke, quotes Master Shangsha, who says, the entire world of the Ten Directions is the whole body of a student. One hand points to heaven, this is heaven. One hand points to the earth, this is the earth. And thus, in heaven above and earth below, I alone am the honored one. Quoting what is the Buddha is said to have uttered at his own enlightenment. I alone am the honored one. We might say honored and honoring. Revered and revering. Respected and respecting. And I think, isn't this why when we let go of our preoccupations and our projections and distractions, our fears, the ordinary stuff of practice, all the things that we become well aware of and we practice freeing ourselves of, that when that begins to calm down and dissipate and drop away, that we then become capable of entering into one time and place, in a place that we call this moment on this earth and experience something that is inexpressible. It's like meeting a parent or a lover or a friend from whom we've somehow grown distant. Maybe so distant we forgot. We forgot the connection. We forgot they were even important. We haven't really given them much thought until that moment of meeting them, and then we think, oh. It's so natural. It's so immediate. Between heaven and earth, uniting heaven and earth, the whole body is heaven and earth. Such a moment in one moment is free of what we think of as physical or mental or sensory. But it frees us to radiate through what is physical and emotional and sensory. Master Dogen in the Sansui, in the Mountains River Sutra, says we should understand that the mountains are not within the human realm, nor within the realm of heaven. They are not to be viewed with the suppositions of human thought. If only we did not compare them with flowing in the human realm, who would have any doubt about such things as mountains flowing or not flowing? I hear that as a plea. If only we did not compare them. If only we allowed ourselves to see them as they are, not compare them to something higher or lower, something more beautiful, something that is to be bought and sold, something that is in the way. If only. To view without the suppositions, the uncertain, unclear beliefs, that's our practice. If we do not compare, Master Dogen says, then how would we have any doubt about the miracle of the mountain, about the miracle of spring? That we might express as poetry, we might express in many different ways, but in that moment, it is inexpressible. And that is enough. That is sufficient. That is complete. And in those moments, we realize that is our nature. We go to so much effort, and necessarily, it seems, to arrive at such a place, and yet everything around us is just naturally so. Can we allow ourselves to think in terms of presence or force or energy or deity or spirit? The name is not so important. Hardly important at all, really. What's important is allowing that kind of intimate contact. From time immemorial, Dogen said, the mountains have been the dwelling place of the great sages. The wise ones and sages have made the mountains their own chamber, their own body and mind. I think of that as our kinship. Kinship ultimately with our Buddha nature, our essential nature. Which is why it makes sense that within delusion, within dislocation, within everything that separates us, there would be a deep, deep pain. How could there not be? And that pain is going to play itself out in all kinds of misguided, upside down, painful ways. How could it not? When those walls come down, we find ourselves as though in a chamber, a dwelling place of deep love and reverence. For those with human voices and those without. But all who have their own language, who speak clearly, is that what we're experiencing in those moments of intimate contact that we might call a deity or a spirit, or we might call a presence or force or an energy? Is it a kind of language that we're experiencing. To restore that kinship, to go, Dogen is saying, we have to go to the mountains, the rivers, the oceans, the plains. We have to go to the place. Just like on our cushions, we have to go to the place, into that inner chamber to encounter Buddha nature. We have to come closer. That's why Dogen says the countenance of the mountains, the way they appear, is so different when we're in the world gazing off at them than when we're in the mountains meeting the mountains. How else could it be that that they would appear inert, distant, uninteresting, boring, irrelevant? That can only happen from a distance. And so we come closer. Always coming closer, calming that comparing, seeking mind, letting the mountain and river deities and the city and bridge deities. They exist everywhere. Approach, as Master Dogen says, we might think we have to go and find them somehow. But Master Dogen says, no, just allow them to come and find you. Put yourself in a place. And just be that sincere heart. Just be that mind that is not comparing, not even seeking. Isn't this the same as may all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, weak or strong, forsaking none? Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart, we should cherish all living beings. It's so curious that those aspects of our nature that are so you, that are so ancient, that are so ever-present, can somehow appear within us so distant. What kind of curious route have we been on to arrive at such a place? A human one, an ordinary one, a long-standing one. It's been going on as long as we've been people. But we are in a time where the mishap of our mischief at the hands of a powerful and dark mind, powerful in its ability to create and dark in its ability to understand. And we're just about at the end of that being viable any longer. Not that it ever was. But the consequences have now so profoundly, we might say, caught up with us. Which might be appropriate because we have been running for a long, long time. To stop, and we might think of returning, or we might think of reclaiming. Again, it doesn't really matter how you think of it, what words you use. It's the thing itself. Master Dogen says, within the Dharma realm, there is a world of sentient beings. Within a single blade of grass, within a single staff, there is a world of sentient beings, sentient and insentient. And wherever there's a world of sentient beings, there inevitably is the world of Buddha ancestors. There's the world of Dharma. There's the world of wisdom. There's the world of non-harming. There's the world of kinship. Dogen says, this truth we should study very carefully May we do that. Those without a voice, or with a voice that we too often have yet to understand, are expecting that of us. We do arise together. We do need each other. People might think that human beings are not necessary on this earth and it would be better if they were just gone. I don't believe that. I believe that like every other creature, there's a role, there's a place. And part of the responsibility of every creature is to know their place, know our place. This truth we should study very carefully.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.